welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. His kingdom, his people, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You are on with the Wise Guys, and it's so good to be here and in the studio here with me. I have a wonderful man that I've gotten to really appreciate over the years. How are you, sir? Good seeing you.
Doing well, sir.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. For some of you who haven't heard the voice of Aaron before, he's been on with us and has filled in the position for Gus and Rick many times, so it's good seeing you here.
Well, it's good to be out and about again.
Yeah, right? Hey, so, you know, we have a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about this idea of teaching. What is teaching? How do you go about it? And who's involved in that, you know? And we're going to be bringing on a special guest at 8:30. And she's going to be helping us out with this idea of teaching and what's the best for our kids, what's the best for our families. And I'm looking forward to that. How about you, Aaron?
We just came out of graduation season, and so the thoughts of teaching right now is like, hey, wait, I've got time. but we always have to be teaching.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, this year seemed to be flooded with graduates that we knew. I mean, I had kids I knew in three or four different graduations all going at the same time.
Yeah, I was at Rotary, it would have been yesterday, and so everybody's talking about, yay, graduation this. And one of the folks there says, yeah, I only have $2 left because I had 7 graduates this year.
I know, really. I mean, you have to think about, okay, what's this kid going to like, and should I give him something, you know? It's a lot of hard work.
Don't we want to just give everybody the exact same education?
Is that the gift? No.
I wouldn't think so. No.
What is education anyways? I mean, we think about that and we're going, okay, do we give kids education? Education. We don't need no education.
Well, and is education just the 12 years that you spend in an institution, or 16 years?
I like those power words you're using today, man. It's like education, institution. That doesn't sound good. I mean, education, institution, that almost creates this picture to me like something that we have to think or something that we have to learn.
Well, I thought that's what the message is out there.
It is?
Well, that's what it sounds like to me whenever I've got the news on.
That we have to learn a particular way or a particular method or a particular source?
Exactly, yeah.
So we're supposed to be not individuals, but maybe
a collective.
A collective.
Yeah.
That's another power word you're using on me, man. Collective. What does collective mean? Is that like we're all supposed to think the same, behave the same in order to meet the collective?
Well, that's what I hear. I hear a lot of people saying that.
Really?
A lot of people are in power saying that, yeah.
Wow. There's another power word. A lot of people in power. So we have education, institutions, collectives, and people in power. Does that mean we're all supposed to be what they want us to be?
Well, what we think or what they think?
I don't know. That's a good question. This is going to be something that we're going to be talking about this morning. And you're certainly welcome to call in at 503-589-1220. And I know, Aaron, you have to be brought up to speed.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, wait a minute, that's a whole different number than I'm used to.
503-589-1220. What is education? You know, and what is it that we're required to do with our kids? How do we teach them? How do we educate them? to where maybe they can actually be an individual.
Well, and like I said, I just had graduation this week, and so we now have two kids who are out of high school.
Yeah.
And so do I quit educating them now?
Well, if they go to college, they're going to be educated.
Yeah, but is that do I still have more to educate them on, or do I just leave it up to them to go and learn now because, you know, they're adult now?
Adult. I always like that word, adult. It almost sounds like boring.
Yeah. It kind of is sometimes.
Adult. Do we quit educating? Do we stop learning? Do we stop helping our kids even though after 18? So what is education? How do we teach? How do we get involved with our kids and family? How do we help someone become an individual or the best that they can be? So again, that's going to be at 503-589-1220. And at 8:30, we have a wonderful person coming on that's going to be talking to us about education, teaching, allowing a person to grow. But we like to always start, as the custom of the wise guys, is we like to open up a text and read it to you and then have a little bit of prayer. Do you remember the text I asked you to look up? I think that's Proverbs 1.
Switch back over here to it. There it is.
That's the wisdom book or the education book.
Yeah. Okay, so here it is. 1:8, Proverbs 1:8.
What does it say?
My son, heed the discipline of your father and do not abandon the teaching of your mother.
What? Say that again, man. I'm not sure I followed. I don't know if I've been educated enough. What is it?
My son, heed the discipline of your father and do not abandon the teaching of your mother.
Wow. That's like two different types of things going on. I mean, it's like the father does something, the mother does something.
It's like a team.
It's like a tag team, right? WWF at the home place. Mom and dad. Dad giving discipline and mom giving teaching. I mean, it's pretty amazing. But it's actually asking the son to heed those things or actually hear those things, mm-hmm. To actually respond to those things.
Yeah.
What do you think that means, discipline from the dad and teaching from the mom? I mean, what's your first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, first thing that comes to mind is, with the discipline is, whoops, I screwed up, but now I'm going to have a consequence.
Really? So you think consequences, like dad with the big old belt?
Oh, yeah. I remember those days. I mean, from, you know, my brother.
Oh,
yeah,
oh.
Like, you know.
Oh, your brother was the one.
Yeah. Like.
I don't always think of discipline as something that's harsh or punishment. You know, many times, like, when I think about being disciplined, like I'm disciplined to learn a song, or I'm disciplined to learn a particular habit, mm-hmm. or I'm disciplined to go out and exercise. And maybe the father just holds us to a certain accounting, you know, hey, dude, I mean, you said you wanted to do this, so let's get up in the morning.
Stick with it, right.
Let's stick with it. Maybe it's that kind of picture. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then mom, I mean, teaching. What did it say about moms again? It says,
It says, do not abandon the teaching.
So do not leave it. You know, I was just back in North Dakota, and I met this wonderful family.
North Dakota.
I know Gus isn't here to go Michigan or what, Minnesota. Yeah. But these were all farm kids, and they were 16, 17, 18, and they all just really respected their mom. In fact, they still called her mommy. You know, hey, mommy, is it all right if we do, you know, this?
you don't hear that very often on this side of the country.
No, you don't. And I was just amazed at how they still looked to mom for some teaching. In fact, she had told me she taught them all how to cook so they could still take care of themselves.
Taught the boys how to cook,
how to fold their own laundry, you know. How to take care of themselves.
Use an iron. Well, they say it differently back there, don't they?
Yarn. And, you know, they all got up early in the morning, like at 5:30 or 6. They went out to feed the cows, the goats, you know, horses. chickens.
Well, you have to when you got that many. You got to start early.
Oh, my word. And then they come back in, you know, they're all eating this big old breakfast. You know, it was pretty amazing to watch how this dynamic worked. You know, and then the father would come home and he would say, okay, what did you guys do today? You know, he would kind of hold their feet to the fire and ask him, were you able to do it?
Wow.
Did you get it done? I mean, it was almost like this text that we're reading.
Almost, huh?
Almost. Hey, well, one of the other customs that we like to do with the wise guys is before we get started, we like to ask the Father, Yahweh, God, to actually enter into this place and to let our discussion be led by him. So let's just take a moment. And if you're there listening in and you're not driving, you can actually bow your heads with us, you know. But if you're driving, I want you to keep your eyes open and keep it, you know, going on the road, right? So let's just take a moment. Father God, we want to thank you for everything that you've given us. You've given us your word in the scripture, and you've given us hope and encouragement by the things that you've created around us. You've told us to listen and to heed, and we ask that we do that this morning as we interview our guest and as we open up scripture and as we talk about this thing called education and teaching and allowing ourselves to be brought up in a way that fit into your kingdom. So, Father, we ask for your blessing here this morning, that anything that is not of you leaves this place. And we ask that we are able to bless those that are listening here this morning, and that if there's anyone here that needs to express themselves or to call in, that they would do so. So, Father, we give this radio show over to you, this conversation over to you, and we praise you for doing that. We thank thee in thy blessed name. Amen.
Wow. So I had an interesting thought.
Yeah.
As you were asking a couple of those questions about education and how do we teach and stuff like that, and I remember that the guy who was asking this question is a former educator and still does a lot of teaching.
Who is that? Who?
You.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
are you getting so old that you're forgetting what you used to do in your life?
Well, I still do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I taught middle school and high school and... And these questions have always...
In an institution?
In an institution, yeah. And then now I do private teaching, private coaching.
Yeah.
You know, and these questions that we're going over has always plagued me. How does a person learn in the best way? How do they retain? You know, so even if I have a topic that I know well and mm-hmm. I want to impart to them, I've always found over the years that I really can't impart what I know to a person. I mean, I can get them excited maybe about it.
So why do you do the thing you do then if you can't get them the information?
I think what I do is to get them excited about the topic, hopefully, or what they want to learn. And if they start digging into the information themselves and I guide them with the information, we actually become a team.
Huh.
And they actually start learning, I think. You know, rather than just me saying, okay, open up your head.
And do this.
And I'm going to just, you know, cut off the top and we're just going to pour in info right into thy brain. And, it, that method doesn't ever seem to retain. But if a person has discipline, mm-hmm. if they actually take the time to chew a topic and to digest it, they seem to retain it. And that, to me, is better. And failure seems to be a big part of that.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. I mean, like, if they do something and then fail at it, and they come to the recognition of why they failed at it, they usually will make adjustments and are able to learn a topic or learn something that they've been wanting to do.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
It is. One of the things I used to do in our family business that with my dad is, we taught some classes as well, and I don't remember the stats offhand because it's been too long since I was looking at it, but it was talking about how we retain the information, the best ways to retain the information, and you know, just by speaking or you know, by listening to somebody speak, really small percent, and you know, by the time you got up to telling somebody else and teaching it to somebody else, retaining that information, you know, was getting up into the high 80s and even 90%, because now you're having to not only think about the information, but you're processing it and you're telling somebody else in a different way than what you learned. And so you've thought about it in multiple different ways in your mind, and now you're retaining that information so much better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The human brain is fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. And one of the kids that I met back there in North Dakota, he showed me his original greenhouse, and it wasn't very good. I mean, it was like small, but he'd kept it on the property. And he took me to the greenhouse, and he said, this is my first attempt at age 11. And he said,
so he's building his own greenhouse at age 11.
Yes. 11 and 12.
Was it playing his Xbox or anything?
No, no. He's building his own little greenhouse. And he showed it to me. And he says, you know, this wasn't very good. And he says, but I want you to see what I have now. So he takes me over, and he's age, I think he was 17.
Okay.
And he shows me these three large commercial greenhouses that is just, looks like the Garden of Eden when you open up the door. I mean, it's just like.
And he built it.
And he built these. And I says, so how's it going for you? He says, oh, pretty good. You know, like this greenhouse over here, you know, it brings around about $12,000 in a year on this one. And then
at 17.
And then the others are bringing in X amount of money, and he sells to the local stores and all this kind of stuff. And I go, wow. And I says, so how did you get so good at this? He says, well, you saw my first greenhouse. I didn't do very well. I thought this was amazing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, learning is something. Let me see if I can pick this up.
That's actually very encouraging that, you know, he's been able to go out at age 11 and start learning something, start learning a new thing, teaching himself how to do, you know, this thing that he's interested in, and turns it into a business within 6 years that
it's bringing in thousands of dollars.
Thousands of dollars. And he didn't have to go to
a university
to be able to, you know, get a horticulture degree to be able to do his own greenhouse thing. He taught himself how to do it.
Yeah, though now he knows that he wants to go get a horticulture. How did you say that? Horticulture?
Yes.
Horticulture. You got to say that three times fast, right?
No, just once. Slow.
I looked this up, okay, because this is a Hebrew radio station, right?
Okay.
Supposed to be, right?
Yes.
Hebrew. So we figured we might as well look up this idea about teaching in Hebrew.
Okay.
Should we? And the word is jilx.
Say that one three times fast.
J-L-X, okay? Get a hold of this meaning. I thought this was fascinating, right? It's a Hebrew word, and its basic meaning is to become familiar with.
Become familiar with.
So if I'm teaching, it says to become familiar with, or to accustom oneself, or even to befriend. That's a lot different than how I was taught to teach when I was back in, like, the university.
Mm-hmm.
Because we would talk about lining kids up in rows and imparting information, you know, and these kids had to have tests and we're going to nail them. No one said anything like this, to become familiar or to accustom oneself or to befriend.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
It's a completely different thought.
Yeah.
On education.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
So if I'm helping someone learn something, it almost sounds like I'm walking side by side with them. Becoming familiar with them, befriending them, and actually guiding them in some way.
Well, and the way you put that, being side by side, sounds more like the apprenticeship
model. It does.
Of, you know, hey, I know how to, you know, I'm an electrician, and there's a lot to know here. So why don't you spend 2-3 years with me and learn everything that we go through all of this stuff?
Right. Well, even something even more basic is like, what if I'm in third or fourth grade? I'm just learning how to spell.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I'm in third and fourth grade and I'm not a good speller.
Don't watch Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, right? But if my teacher or mentor would come along beside me and say, let's figure out how you learn how to spell. Let's figure out how these words come together.
Yeah.
Well, man, I wonder what would happen. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so if you've just tuned in, we're talking about teaching, education. What's the best way to teach? What's the best way to educate? Is there a way? How do we do it from a biblical point of view? We're going to be having someone come in. It'll be at 8:30. She's going to be calling in. Do you have her name there?
Oh.
Is that pulling up? Yeah, this is going to be like homeschooling. And this woman is just fantastic. And I think her husband's coming along with her, too.
Oh, that'd be great.
Going to be awesome.
Ann Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Craig.
Ann and Craig. Oh, man, I'm looking forward to that. They're going to be actually one of our new people coming on the Hebrew Nation Radio online. And you're going to actually hear some of their shows.
Oh, they've got shows, too?
Yeah, they're bringing on shows on the Hebrew Nation Radio.
Great.
And you can actually find out about that stuff if you would go to Hebrew Nation Radio online, and you look that up, and you go to our website.
Is that
.com? Find them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't even have to do that. Just put a Google search on Hebrew Nation Radio.
What if you don't use Google?
Okay, well, Firefox?
Okay.
Yeah, one of those? I don't know. I mean, it seems like we're in this little age of just pop something in and up it comes.
Yeah.
And up Hebrew Nation always comes. Yeah, so just look it up, and you'll go to family section or the homeschooling section, and you're going to find them, and you're going to see their schedule. They're going to be awesome.
Cool.
What's their names again? Ann and Craig?
Ann and Craig.
Right on. So I'm looking forward to that. So you guys stay tuned with us when we come back on. And we're going to interview them. They've been doing this for a long time. I think they have a number of kids, I'm sure.
Yeah, it says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Looks like 7 kids.
Oh, my word.
From 23 to 9.
They're going to be able to answer just about any question we throw at them, I think.
I would think so, too. A little bit of experience.
I'm looking forward to that conversation. I mean, really big time. And so we're going to ask you to kind of hold on to your calls here for about an hour. But when you want to call Bacon in on us, it's going to be at around 9:30, and that'll be 503-589-1220. And we're going to be... Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. Craig, are you on with us? I should have both Ann and Craig. We're just having trouble hearing you, so we're not right back up yet. So hang on tight, and we'll see what we can do. I wonder if we can bring you guys back up. If I'm mumbling, that's okay. Yeah, so hang on tight.
This is Barry Phillips, inviting you to join me for Reconnect on Hebrew Nation Radio. Reconnect seeks to provide help for those disconnected and isolated, those soloing in your walk without a congregation to study or to worship with.
And now it's time for Selah Selections.
Genesis 12 is where we find God's covenant with Abraham. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. God made this covenant not only with Abraham, but with his descendants. That's why cursing the Jewish people is not a good idea. As Abraham's descendants, they receive God's protection. But are they the only ones so blessed? The Bible says those who receive salvation through Messiah Yeshua become part of Israel, not to replace the Jews, but to join them in Yahweh's covenant nation. So if we say bad things about our brethren in Yeshua, are we cursing Abraham? And if so, what could we expect in return? To Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the nations.
Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You are on with the wise guys, and hopefully things have gotten a little bit more wise around here, and we're picking things up. Hey, good morning. Is Ann and Craig on the line with us?
We are on the line. How are you this morning?
Oh, it's awesome to hear your voice. I'm glad things are finally starting to work. Wow, all the way from Michigan, right?
Yes. We are outside of We are outside of Lansing, Michigan, so central, right in the middle of the palm of God's hand.
Isn't that amazing? Why do all the Midwesterners call that area the palm of God's hand? What is up with that? Is that because it's just like open fields, or it's just like you have thunderstorms, or what is with that?
Well, I don't know. It just feels like... It's the best of everything. We've got farm, we've got city, we've got everything.
Wow.
You know, we just all like each other here, so.
That's got to be. Well, I'm glad it is the palm of God's hand. I like it. Yeah. So, hey, so tell us a little bit about yourselves. You know, how long have you guys been married? How did you meet? And, you know, give us some background on how you came to know each other, and also how you came to know God, Yahweh. How did you come to that conclusion?
Okay, well, we have been married, let's see, it's going to be 26 years this summer.
Wow.
Craig and I met when we were at Baptist Bible College, so we were both studying for ministry, and we... let's see, it was a fast and furious romance. We got married the next summer after we met. So,
wow.
And then, you know, he continued on, studying to be a youth pastor, but the father changed his heart and put him into public school education. And so it took him 7 years to get a 4-year degree in education. And then he, has his secondary in that. And then the father started taking us towards missions, and he directed us to, just lots of different areas of service over the years.
Wow.
So we have, I am so sorry. I'm having like a really crazy feedback. So if I'm sounding a little funny, because I'm like hearing two different things at once. So
I'm sorry.
I apologize if I'm acting funny.
It's but, okay. Act funny with us. It's just fine.
We usually act funny ourselves. So.
Okay. So we hold on one. Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's like I can hear another radio show at the same time.
We have another radio show like in our ears, and we can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're still having some trouble on the transition, and let's see if we can get that fixed while we're talking. I'll send out a little note here. You know, but just do your best, and we'll keep doing our best. But we're hearing you clear on this end.
Very good. All right. Well, I will keep going. So my husband was working in public schools, and he was a football coach full time as well. And that was for 12 or 13 years. And during that time, we had quite a few children. Now we have 7 children, but at the time we had 5, I got really sick, and the father kind of put me on bed rest for many months. And during that time, I had a lot of questions about our faith and just what the Bible said, and was it true, was it not true, and so on. So he brought us into Torah, basically, long story short, just because I had time to read my Bible in a way that I'd never had time to read it before. It's had a huge impact on our lives. That was in 2006. And so over the next few years, my husband at this point was a Baptist pastor, and he just slowly helped us see one thing after another. We weren't super fast like some people in seeing things, but he helped us see. And over the next few years, we just kind of, as one person said it, we kind of jumped off the cliff and said, you know, we're going to do this with everything we have. Mm-hmm. So we decided to pursue ministry, you know, from a Torah perspective, full time, starting in 2012.
Uh-huh.
So,
hold on just for a second, because I have to ask Craig something. Craig, you taught in public school, and for how long did you teach?
I taught in the public school for 10 years.
Wow.
I actually was, I started out as a course teacher, and I taught for 3 years, and then in Florida, Missouri, and then I became a high school administrator in Arizona.
Yeah,
and did that for 3 years, and then I was a high school counselor for 3.5 years in Iowa.
Fabulous. So, boy, you know, hats off to you, because I mean that's a calling in and of itself, and
yeah.
and we definitely need quality people in the public school arena, you know, because as you know, there's not a whole lot of God there, right?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, the last school I was at, I can honestly say, in Southern farm country of Iowa, there was myself and one other gentleman, which I would call conservative individuals, and all the rest were not.
Wow.
And you could take that for however you wanted, with everything else that would go along with that. So, yeah, it was a struggle. It felt like the longer I was in, the more it definitely became not something that valued biblical belief.
Right. You know, I am just so excited that you're actually out there teaching. You know, we seem to live in a culture where men are on the slight side in the educational field. I mean, I was just doing a study the other day when it came to elementary ed, and I think the numbers of women teaching were close to 95% versus at 5% male. And in the high school, it wasn't a whole lot better. We're talking 80% ladies and 20% men. Why is that? Why do you guys think that is within the regular school system? And what are you guys doing different in a homeschooling scenario?
I think I got your question, so make sure I did. If I didn't, let me know.
Okay.
But Probably still doesn't seem to have much of a standard anymore of biblical truth.
Well, no, I think I'm asking, why is there such, why are there so few men in the educational field? And especially now, we're at close to, in the elementary section, we're at close to 95% of female teachers in the elementary section, and on the high and on the high school, close to 80%. So there's very few men. How do you guys? Why do you guys see that? And I'm asking both of you, why do you see that? And what difference are you making in a homeschool arena?
Gotcha. Okay, last time I heard you. Gotcha. Well, a lot of it, I would say a lot of it deals with, shall I say, the struggle of economics, for one thing, in education. As unfortunately, the education system is not a place where you can go and increase your living and increase your money and things like that, and with the rising cost of college education and things like that. It's not a very good place to go if you want to, like, make a living and make some money, for one thing. So most of the people that go into it, of course, are like, I can make a difference in kids' lives kind of idea.
Okay.
But now, more and more, the regulations and things that are imposed upon teachers every year negate the ability even to do that a lot. And so it becomes very difficult that direction. But it's like, because men tend to, you know, I think, especially, you know, probably men who desire to probably get married, most of them, and have a family and support their family and things, it's not a place that promotes, you know, the ability to do that as well. So that'd be one thing. But also, I would say that tends to be something that promotes an agenda where manhood and is kind of a negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, it once it promotes an opportunity for where those of being a male are constantly looked down upon, and of course, anything that deals with a male and being able to work that in that direction, any type of male type of qualities and stuff, are often looked down upon because, you know, they're not sensitive enough, they're not kind enough, they're not accepting enough, and things like that. So, I think that's the big issue.
Yeah, I think, yeah, thank you. And what do you think? I mean, Aaron and I were just reading this text at the start of today's show, and it says this: hear, my son, your father's instruction, or hear his discipline, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. So hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. It seems like education or learning is a dual thing, both from mom and both from dad. Is this why you guys went to homeschooling versus public school? I mean, tell us a little bit about that. Are you there with us, Ann?
My wife's having technical problems and can't hear.
Oh, shoot. Oh, bummer. I wonder how we can help that. Is she able to share with you on the phone that you're on now?
Can try, yeah. Say the question again. And
Aaron and I had read this text in the morning. It was Proverbs 1:8, okay? And on Proverbs 1:8, we were hearing these words: hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. It seems like education is a dual or a tag team event. Both mom and dad are involved. Is this why you guys went to homeschool rather than staying with public school?
Okay. Is education a tag team event?
Yeah.
And is that why we changed the homeschooling?
Yeah.
Yes. I'll let my wife talk about that.
Okay, good.
Okay, hopefully you can hear me. I can't hear you, so I'm going to do my best. My husband's trying to write the questions out for me. But is homeschooling a tag team event? Oh, my goodness, yes. But it hasn't been that way for us all along. I started homeschooling 20-some years ago when my oldest son was born. He's 23 now. And my husband was working long hours. Again, he was a football coach and a teacher. But having said that, when I was on bed rest with my last child, which was, he's nine.
Yeah.
My husband came home full time. At first, he was just able to work from a home office, but then eventually, have started our own business. And oh my goodness, how much better it is to have a mom and a dad involved in everything from discipline to just having, two people on the same team. Your kids look at you like, okay, well, there's two of them that say that, so it must be right. And,
right.
Sometimes we've, gone in the other room and closed the door and said, well, what do we do? And it's really helped a lot. But I also remember what it's like to not have a dad there and to have him working. I mean, he really worked long hours. And there, especially during football season or during sports seasons, I wouldn't see him that much. But I think for moms that are in that situation or dads that are in that situation, I knew what my husband wanted, and I could portray both of us to our kids and be a united front to our kids and say, you know what, we're a team, and whatever I say, I know dad's going to back when he gets home. And whatever he says at home, if it's something different than what I said, sorry, kid, to go with him. And that really helped us a lot. And I think that is what anyone could do to try to, because what kids really need is to see a marriage working. That's a biblical principle that raises healthy kids. And I can do that even if we're separated.
Wow. So your advice is they got to see a marriage working, which is meaning mom and dad love each other, and mom and dad respect each other, and mom and dad support one another. And if they see that, they're able to grow because they know that you guys are consistent. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if we're consistent and we back each other, I think it would be kind of like in the Torah if you had Miriam coming up against Moses and saying, you know what, he doesn't have a right to say that. Who's he? He's nobody. And I think sometimes our husbands come in after working really long hours, and they don't know what's been going on all day. And we come to them and we're like, this happens at home. I want you to fix it. One guy, how's he supposed to do that? But if I will just back him, no matter what he says, our kids realize that the authority structure that is over them was put there by God. And we communicate that to them. And just, it's easy. Say, you know what? God says, honor your father and your mother. And we're one. I just think it really gives kids a security.
Yeah.
And it's conducive to not just education, but just to help them raise, grow up as healthy people.
So how do mom and dads do different types of education or training within the home? So like if I'm homeschooling, are there certain things that kids will only learn from a dad and at a certain age, or do they continue to learn from mom? When do you see that transition happening, or is there a transition?
Okay, I think if I heard you correctly, certain subjects that a dad should teach, you know what, if at all possible, if there was any way to make it happen, if the dad could teach at least Bible to the kids, and even if that's just tucking them in at bedtime if they're young and just doing a Bible story with them, or just praying with them, just simple things, but if at all possible, I also think that boys just really need to see a dad. They need to spend time with their dad. They need to, if they can shadow him, that, at his work, I know that's not possible for everybody, but just letting sons see their dad, I don't know if it matters for which subject, although it might depend on a family's interest. For us, we've had a lot of interest in math and science, and he's really good at that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Craig, go ahead.
Are you there? Are you there with us? Uh-oh. I don't know if we lost them. Are you there with us, Craig? Boys,
did the tech bug bite us again?
I think the tech bug might have bit us. Hey, Ed or Craig, if you can hear us, why don't you try hanging back up and try calling again, and let's see if we can get a better connection. Let's see if that can work. I don't know if you can hear us. Can you do that for us, or are you still on? I'm not hearing them here at the moment. Hey, guys, I'm going to drop you off the air and try calling back in for us, okay? Let's see if you can do that. And I don't know if you can text it. Oh, there you are for a moment.
Well, there they went.
Okay. Yeah, so try calling back. I think what they're starting to talk about is really exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, because, I mean, we always think, you know, what is this a dad topic or is this a mom topic? But she was saying something that I would not have thought of, okay? So let's see if we bring him back up. Hey, Craig, does that work for you?
The guy is still very loud.
Oh, my goodness. So do you have the radio shut off there at your home? And are you just on the phone?
Yes.
Okay.
We're just on the phone.
Man, I don't...
Like, it's somewhere from, it sounds like it's from over that direction or something, but it's like a major AM talk show, and I can't hear it all.
NationOnline.com and learn what it's like to become a peculiar people.
You may know Abraham as the father of nations, but how does that include Great Britain and the United States? Stephen J. Spikerman weaves history and prophecy in his two-volume series, A Game-Changing Revelation. What is the ancestry that links America and Great Britain to Israel? Are they mentioned in the Bible? If so, where? Grab a volume for $20 or get both for $30. Challenge your perceptions with Spikerman. His research and experience may prove quite the game changer.
Check it out at HebrewNationOnline.com and click on the Marketplace link.
Aquanetics H2O Hydro realizes water is the most precious natural resource in the world. Water contamination is the biggest threat to water supplies worldwide. Solar Hydro offers the world's most effective and portable freshwater purification system on the planet. Emergency preparedness worldwide. Missionaries in remote locations hunting and camping. The fact is, without clean, purified drinking water, it's impossible to provide security for you, your family, your community. The Solar Hydro is a solar charge backpack system that will purify any contaminated freshwater source anywhere in the world and on demand. We'll provide up to 100 gallons of fresh, clean drinking water per day. Enough water for drinking, cooking, hygiene, pets, small livestock, and even a small garden. The Solar Hydro will remove radon gas, pesticides, herbicides. It will also eradicate disease-causing bacteria and viruses. For more info, visit HebrewNationOnline.com and go to the Marketplace link.
Good morning and welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. Hebrew Nation, His Kingdom, His People, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. And yes, we've had some technical difficulties.
And we had the professional come in.
And we're going to admit it. Okay. And yeah, you know. Yeah, but we're back on. We're back on live, and we're really excited to have our guests back on here shortly. Ann and Craig Elliott, all the way from where?
Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah.
Homeschooling team.
Palm of God's hand, I think is how they put that.
That's right. It's just fabulous. And I'm just really excited to hear more from
from them, because what they have to offer is fantastic. They've been homeschooling, what, since 2006? Isn't that what they said? And they have about seven kids?
About 20 years is what they were saying.
Oh, my word. And they come with all kinds of backgrounds and ministry and and education and experiences. Also, missionary work.
Missionary, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, hey, you know, we're going to be looking forward to that. And we're talking about this idea of education. What does it involve? How do we teach our kids to grow and appreciate Yahweh?
Well, don't you just give them all of the information, like, you know, in the form of like a fire hose? You know, just throw it all out there at them and just say, here, just what sticks, sticks, what doesn't, whatever.
And then walk away.
Then walk away.
And never repeat anything ever again, right?
Yeah.
Oh, don't you love that?
No.
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 I mean, things have to be repeated, right? You would think.
Say that again to me?
Yeah, things should be repeated, right? I mean, did anyone ever repeat to you how to throw a basketball?
You know, I didn't get – I got some formal training, but it was mostly just, you know, I don't remember who it was. Probably my dad kind of helped me, you know. But, yeah, it was, you know, do it like this. You didn't do it right. Okay, do it like this. You didn't do it right. Okay, do it like this, you know. And after time, you start getting that. And, yeah, it wasn't just one time of, hey, do this, you know. And I had it. So, yeah, it was certainly – repeated.
Repeat. Until that stupid ball goes in that stupid little basket, right? Why do we always think that that's only good in sports, and we don't necessarily think about that when it comes to academics or learning anything else? I mean, like sciences. I mean, we always think that, hey, here's your textbook, read the textbook, and then you ought to know everything.
Right, just the one time.
How does that work?
I mean, when I was doing my multiplication table, you know, it wasn't that they said, hey, 9 times 9 is 81 one time.
So you actually remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Wow. 9 times 9. I actually had to stop and think about that for a moment.
I saw that. I saw you do it.
81.
You know, it does take the repetition. You know, sure, there is a fact every once in a while that comes up, and you hear it one time, and you're like, oh, hey, yeah. But you know, those things are so rare. It's not your entire education can't be, here's all of these things and just remember it forever now. It's going to take time and digesting it, talking about it, you know, trying to find out, okay, well, like history is a great one.
Yeah, right.
Because they throw out dates, you know.
How do you even relate to dates?
Right. You know, I could throw out, you know, 1791 to you. What is 1791 in history?
I don't know.
That's the year the Bill of Rights.
Oh, that's right.
That's the Bill of Rights.
That's correct. How did you remember that?
History, learning, teaching myself.
Was there any sort of cue there to help you to remember that? Like 1791, was 91 special in any sort of way?
No, it was just a matter of reminding myself all the time.
And, really?
You know, carrying my pocket constitution all the time, and so.
Wow.
I am one of those.
You are one of those. Hey, well, we do have our educational experts back on the air with us, right? Hey, good morning, Ann and Craig. How are you, and can you hear us?
We can hear you.
Well, yes, we can.
Yay, we got it fixed.
Thank you for your patience, you guys. Just, you know, super blessings. Hey, so we were talking about this experience of why you guys have chosen to move from maybe a public school setting or sending your kids to public school or even
institutions.
Yeah, or with the even teaching there, and why you move to a homeschool setting. What are the benefits of that, and why did you do it?
Okay, well, that is a great question because I grew up in the public school system, and my wife grew up in a Christian school all her life. So we both came from these two different backgrounds, so to speak. I had been through some very short of stints at a Christian school. And I always said to her, the Christian schools aren't any different than the public schools. And she'd go, well, I don't want my kids in a public school. We were first married. This is actually one of those very few things where we weren't like together on right away when we first got married. And we really had to kind of hash out together. But we began to discuss it. And we both were like,
homeschooling is not the option, though. When we were first married. Because I grew up with some homeschooling kids. And
they're weird, aren't they?
For saying this, they were the weirdos. Yeah, they were the ones, like the recluses who, they homeschooled because they didn't want to be around anybody, and they wore weird clothes and stuff like that. Forgive me for saying this, people. I'm sorry if it says, because I'm not trying to. But that's kind of how we thought of it.
Yeah.
Well, we're both homeschool families here as well, so we get it, too.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So that was kind of our initial thought process. And I don't know if my wife is hearing this or not.
Yeah, I'm here.
So don't say anything.
To actually decide to do homeschooling, because I don't remember exactly the conversation or the thing that kind of clicked and said, yeah, this is where we want to go. I'll let her talk about it.
Okay, so I believe in the power of prayer, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm already married by this point, going, oh, no, we didn't talk about this.
Uh-oh.
But he was in college to finish out his degree for education, and he had to do his student teaching at an alternative school, and he would come home every day and say, oh, Ann, you should see these kids. And they would send them to alternative school so that they could get one-on-one attention, because imagine that, it really helps. And we'd say, man, that's kind of what you would do for homeschooling. I remember, Craig, do you remember the one in Fort Myers that you would teach at? And all of the interesting stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't just there, because I did a lot of my interning in alternative schools, too. So pretty much most of my teaching experience up until I actually got into teaching was with alternative kids. And you get a lot of interesting stuff, but most of these kids, for every one that was in that alternative school, there was at least one in regular schools also, because, I could tell you story after story of public school things, but I won't.
Right.
Yeah. And these are, I did do some teaching in one of the areas was Fort Myers, Florida, which is a large, metropolitan area. But most of the places I taught at were small, farming communities, southern Iowa, central Missouri, northern Arizona. And these same problems that are in the big cities are also in the rural towns.
Yeah. I actually taught in private school. I also did a lot of coaching in public school. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. But, I do find your comment to be somewhat the same. Kids have similar problems. It doesn't really matter if it's in a private school or in a public school. But I did find that, for the most part, private school teachers had a little bit more of a caring heart, because classes were typically smaller and they weren't earning quite as much. They seemed to be in it more for the mission thought process. But there's still this element of being fearful of parents and what parents can bring to the table. What do parents bring to the table in a homeschool setting, and what are some of the weaknesses of parents in a homeschool setting?
Well, that's a great question, because I think this is something that is on the mind of every parent that decides to homeschool and pull their kids out of public or Christian schools and things like that. The struggle is that the mentality is that the people who are the teachers are trained professionals. So how am I as a parent able to teach my children all the things that those trained professionals can teach?
Correct.
And that tends to be one of the largest deterrents for parents coming in, taking their kids and teaching them in homeschooling. The great thing about the homeschooling at large right now is the fact that it's become so vast and so large and such a major thing that there are tons of curriculums out there now, and a lot of things to help parents to be able to transition into the role of a homeschooler as a teacher, and not just, the kid coming home and saying, hi, how was school today? And that's basically all you know about their education. Ann, do you want to add to anything?
I'm jumping at the bit here. speaking from a woman's perspective, when I I didn't even know I would really want to have kids. I just thought I wanted to have a career. And yet the father laughed and said, oh, no, we're going to give you 7 children.
Yeah, right.
And I really didn't expect that from my life. But when that child is born, your first one, you're like, no teacher knows that child like I know him. And I'm sorry. He's going to have to go to the bathroom every 2 hours, and no teacher is going to they're not going to understand him. And sometimes he's scared of this, or he really loves playing outside, and they're not going to let him. And I just kept thinking this countdown clock was ticking. And back then it was 5 parents. Now are sending their kids off even earlier. And I just thought, how in the world can I ever let him go? I just can't do it. And I thought, and another thing that was really influential in my life is my husband was in school full time. We got married young. I don't know if I said this earlier, but I was 19 when we got married. It was just after my freshman year of college.
Wow.
And
I was 20.
So finances were tight. So I was trying to work from home at the same time as be a mom. And one of the things I learned quickly is that I could learn any job. And my dad and my mom, you know, encouraged us in this, but they said, you can learn any skill if you just put your mind to it. You can learn it. And with homeschooling, if you sit back and you look at your 2-year-old and you think, I don't know algebra, I can't teach him algebra. And that's just dumb. He's 2. You don't need to teach him algebra. You need to teach him to tie his shoe. You need to teach him to say, please. You know, so I think what we do is fear starts to creep in, and that fear just overrides everything, when actually what the father wants is for us to just teach our kids to do what we do, he's equipped us as parents because we're older. We're 20 years older at least, you know, usually. And we have some life experience, and he says, calm down. If it's math and you just have to teach them how to add, you can learn that. And then the next day teach it. And it's the next skill, you can learn it. And the next day teach it. You do not have to go to college for this. You can learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know it. I think we as humans overcomplicate everything when this is something we're designed to do by God.
You know, Anne, when I was teaching middle school, when I would hit a topic that maybe I didn't know, I was transparent with the kids and say, hey, you know, I don't know this one very well, but I can guide you to the areas where we can find information, and we can find out together as a team, and we can make this work. And I can use my life experiences to help you through the questions, and we can maybe get this done. Is homeschool, or can homeschool kind of be like that? And
oh, absolutely.
are there good benefits with that?
I think it's way better. Yeah, go ahead.
We hear all the time where parents are contacting us and saying, you know, I'm learning just as much as my kids are about, you know, things. And like, for instance, one of the big subjects obviously is Bible or Torah, and that one for especially with the kids and the parents go through it together, the parents are like, wow, I didn't know all these things that are, you know, are in the Bible and stuff, that they're teaching them to their kids, and they're learning just as much as their kids are about the scriptures just going through that one subject. And that's the case with all of them. And I was going to piggyback off of what you said about teaching. My degree is in history and social studies.
Uh-huh.
My first teaching job was at a Christian school, and I taught biology, anatomy, and physiology and study skills. My second year, which was in a public school, I taught physical science to 9th through 11th graders.
Wow.
And then my third year, I finally got into teaching U.S. history in middle school. So
how did all that Bible help you?
It was great.
It taught him self-control.
There you go.
I'll tell you what, anatomy and physiology was like teaching, you know, I would learn it, just like my wife would say, I would learn it and teach it the next day. I'd go home and learn it and teach it the next day. It was, if you can do that with anatomy and physiology, which is, you know, something that's one of the higher level classes, you can do it with math or any of them, and if as you're going through, and the kid is learning these things a lot on their own also, we found this even with our own kids, because we're like, yeah, there's that point where you get to, and you're like, are my kids really learning? And am I really doing a good job? And then the next thing you know, they're out there and they're like picking this stuff up without you even being around. And a lot of it's because they become capable, I think, in homeschooling. The concept of homeschooling allows kids to become much more of a self-teaching ability. Mm-hmm. To look and research and to do the things necessary to find skills that a parent doesn't necessarily always have.
You know,
and if a parent, oh, so sorry.
No, go ahead.
If a parent knows everything, then they'll never model those self-teaching skills to their children. Mm-hmm. They'll never see you looking something up and asking questions. And in Torah time, I was thinking about Torah time as Craig was talking. We do Torah together as a family in the morning after breakfast, and we've been through the Torah quite a few times now. And yeah, we are still learning things. We always should be learning things, but it's super fun when we go on Sabbath and our whole congregation is talking about that Torah portion. And just to catch your kids' eyes across the room and they're looking at you and kind of chuckling because you had inside conversations at the table at home. And you know things that you know never be able to share with your congregation, but you shared your deepest thoughts with your own children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just such a privilege. You can never get that in any school situation.
But let me ask you this question, and it's going to be a little bit of a tougher one, and I hold it to myself too, but what do you do with the experience side of education that actually helps someone not only just understand the surface of a topic, but the intricate details of a topic? And let me give you a little bit more of an example. I teach people how to train horses. I've been doing it since the 80s, right? And so I can have people come to me and say that they've read a book on training horses, and and that they know how to train horses from that book, and maybe they've gone ahead and done one horse, and but I've trained close to 1,000 some horses and thousands of people. And so when I look at that, I'm going, okay, that's nice. Let's see what you know about this. And I'll throw something at them, and they don't have a clue because they don't have enough experience, and they haven't been around a person that knows every detail of that topic. So how does homeschool address that area? Is it done because you can taste, feel, and act? Is it because you take longer in a year to approach a topic? You know, like there are kids that say, I mean, this is funny. Ask a homeschool kid, what grade are you in? And they go, seven, eight, ninth.
All three of them?
All three of them. So is it the length of time? Is it from pass, fail? Is it from sight, touch, hear? Is it from answer that for us. I mean, how does someone deal with that?
Sure. Do you want me to go ahead, Craig? And then I know you're probably going to want to say things too. First of all, you have time. In a public school situation, the teacher has, you know, 15 kids, say, or more in a classroom. You will never be able to get that. You are getting book knowledge in a classroom. And I know there are exceptions, especially, you know, for certain subjects. But in a homeschool environment, there is no reason you should be spending 6-8 hours a day on school. You can get all those academics, especially reading and writing, those key things that we need to do so that we can read the scriptures, math, history, and science. Those key things can be gotten done in the morning. And now you have time to go out and live life and try things. But I also think that some of that happens. We try to be masters, or what is it, jack of all trades and master of none.
Yeah.
When in a homeschool environment, our kids tend to do what we do. You know, if a family is a farming family, their kids tend to know more about animals because they just do that as life. And our family, we do a lot more on computers, and our kids are all geeks, just like us. Craig, do you have anything to add?
I am wanting more of your geekhood. I mean, you actually seem to know a lot about computers, and if I just had a fifth of what you know, I think I would be good. You know, but this leads us to another question, and still keep that question in the back of your mind. But you had mentioned before you don't want to let go of those kids. Is there a time where parents need to let go of their kids? So when and how do they master a topic how does that happen? And when do you actually let go of your kids so they can be an adult? Or do they?
I think one of the best ways to understand mastery is just like you said, you're talking about the horses, that when you, in order to find out mastery, you ask them a question and then they can see how they what they tell you or if they have a clue what they're talking about. And most of the time, if you really want to understand mastery of what a child has, have a conversation with them.
Okay.
And so what we oftentimes have done is if we're concerned that our kids aren't catching on to a topic or a subject or a key point that they're supposed to be learning in school, we'll sit down and we'll start having a conversation with them and just start asking them questions about it and see what they can tell us. And if they are struggling with it, then we know that we need to spend some more time on that subject. If they are flying through it and have a complete grasp of it, well, we know that we can go on to the next topic. See, that's one of the benefits of homeschooling is, number one, you know your children more than any teacher's ever going to know your child.
Mm-hmm.
Like my wife said, 15, that's laughable because most places aren't 15 kids in a class. Most
no.
of them
40.
Are up 25 to 30 kids in a class.
I had 40. Yeah.
You had 40? Yeah,
I had 40.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I had one class. It was a fourth period class right before lunch, and I was in the middle room, and the room had no air conditioning and no windows. It would get 80. It was like 80 to 85 constantly in there, and I had 20 plus kids that were at what we call regular to learning / behavior disorder kids.
Oh my word!
And I would spend most of my time in classroom management.
Covers room and board, all the activities, and just about all the food that you can eat. The campground Mile High Pines in Angeles Oaks, they're very good at catering to Messianic believers. We have great dorms that have restrooms and showers. There's water in their lake. They've got zip lining. They've got rock climbing walls. And we're excited again to have Brad Scott from Wild Branch Ministries. We have a live band for praise and worship led by Rodra Boya Israel. We're excited to have a lot of married young men and women serve as counselors on staff, knowledgeable about the words and passionate about wanting to make a difference. For anyone who registers, simple process. You go to messiahwestcoast.com and you click on register. There is a dress code. We have a statement of faith, rules of conduct. We also have some scholarships available. So please visit our website, messiahwestcoast.com. If you can't come, please pray for us.
Today. Hey, we are so blessed because we are interviewing some wonderful people all the way from what state is that again?
Michigan.
Michigan, yeah. The palm of God's hand, is as it was put to us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Ann and Craig, who've been doing homeschool for a while, and they got kids, and they got all kinds of experiences, and they're filling us in on this homeschool idea and thought. And just before the break, Craig was telling us about the benefits of time, because there's shortage of time many times in a school setting. And I agree. I think it took me, 10 minutes many times to say, hey, kids, let's all sit down and let's get to work,
That was at Shabbat.
Right.
So, Craig, you were talking about
the kids, though. That's the adults.
Yeah, right?
Adults.
Yeah, you were talking about that survey that had been done. Fill us back in on how that ended up.
So after they did all this, they found that less than 2 hours of teaching was going on in any given day out of that 7.5 hours.
Wow.
All the rest was done with classroom management, changing classes and getting your books out and all this kind of stuff that's going on. If you think about that, at a home school, if you do 3 hours, you're doing better than what the kid would get in school.
Yeah.
From teaching-wise.
Dude, I just got it. Most of my students for
there's a big giant light bulb.
Oh my goodness!
Over here right now.
Yeah.
But most of my kids that I teach right now are all for equestrian or for voice, right? And they all look stressed during school. I mean, they're stressed out to the max. And it's not until they're on their vacation break that you actually get to see the real kid. Because if you're right, there's only 2 hours of real instruction, and all the teachers are yelling and screaming at them that they have to know this material, but there's only 2 hours of instruction, it's no wonder these kids are stressed out of their minds.
Absolutely. Well,
amen. Can I say something?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
There's a side stress, though, that comes for homeschooling families that people don't talk about.
Good.
And that is the fact that the same thing can happen at home if a home doesn't have procedures and schedules and management, or you've got a 2-year-old and a baby screaming and a dog barking and people calling and Facebook dinging, and that same stress can happen in a home situation. I don't think people are talking about that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. How do you fix that?
You start with first things first.
What?
Yes.
Don't try and keep up with the Joneses.
Awesome.
I think, you know, just like with the public schools, you know, the parents, they ship their kids off after they're done with school off to the next activity, the next activity, the next activity, and they don't get home till 9 o'clock, and then they have all their homework still to do to get ready for the next day, and getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to get on.
Oh, my
school at 7:30,
word.
You know?
You were saying. So I have to actually pick something. You know, when I was working within a school system, I had parents who wanted their kids to be on every activity, every team, and they were so stressed out that they couldn't work. And I see the same thing happening with the homeschoolers. So how do you as parents actually decide what activity is for what kid? How do you nurture their passion, their talents, their giftings, and yet still manage your time? I mean, how do you do this? Inquiring minds want to know. Come on.
Sure, it's priorities. If priorities are everything, and we get our priorities from Scripture, amen?
Amen.
So Deuteronomy is the book of parenting, and in Deuteronomy it has four things parents are supposed to do.
Okay.
They're supposed to teach their kids to hear, which is Shema. And that does not mean I can hear you screaming at me. It means that they're actually hearing you, and they can pay attention, and they're absorbing what you took in, okay?
Okay.
Which... You have to start when your child is a baby, and you teach them to listen to your voice and respond to your voice. And the earlier you start, the more you're going to be able to teach them their interests and all that when they're 15.
Wow.
You can't start at 15. You've got to start when they're little. And if you didn't know to do that, and now you have a 15-year-old, then you pull back. You get back to priorities. And the first thing is you've got to teach your child to hear you. If they can't hear you, they can't hear the Father.
Wow.
But then... So here, the second one is learn, and that's where you actually impart all this wonderful information. But I think that, you know, again, it starts the younger the better. And then the third one is keep, which is like keep of a castle, where you guard something that you've already learned. And that means that review, and that's where homeschoolers have the advantage, that time that you can review, discuss, practice. But the final one is to do. You have to send them out. And I think of doing as like a coach standing on the sidelines. You know, they've taught them their drills. They've taught them how to do their ball drills and how to pass and throw and all this stuff. But now you stand on the sideline and you send them out, and you're coaching them from the sideline. You're giving them, you know, no, try this. Go over that way. Craig, you're better at coaching. But anyway.
You're getting the idea, dear.
Oh, no,
I mean, there's so much I want to say. I know there's a limited time. It's hard to decide what thing to say.
Right.
But are you done, hon? I don't want to cut you off.
Go ahead, babe.
I love this.
Well, you were going back to the sit you said other kids in 7th, 8th, and 9th grade kind of thing. They're a little embarrassed by that and that kind of thing. Well, that's, I think, actually a benefit of homeschooling that, unfortunately, parents don't understand. Is if you go and understand research education, what we see in the United States in today is based upon stuff that was done in the early 20th century, where they thought of a child as a product.
Yes.
And you would stick a product in at 5, and at the age of 18, a product would come out the way you wanted, and that product they wanted to come out was a good U.S. citizen. And so based on a gentleman by the name of Dewey, who was an atheist and just a sick man himself, but
he's looked at the factory system that Thomas Edison and others have been implementing. He says, hey, we can do this in education.
Yeah.
And so we stick a kid in at five, and after a year, he goes to first grade. After a year, he goes to second and third and so on. And then he's a senior at 18. We shoot him out, and he should be a good guy by that time and know what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Well, they've done tons of research, of course, since then, and that is a bunch of hogwash. That is not true in the reality of human beings. God makes human beings very unique and different, and you can't cookie cutter human beings and children into some little system and say this is the way it works.
Yeah.
So you have Johnny who starts picking up. You know, you start teaching him how to read and stuff at five, and Johnny's just not learning how to read at five. And Sally next to him at five is just like grabs onto it, and she's like reading books like every day, and you have to like the parent has to pull the book out of her hands.
I've seen it.
Going to do anything else, and kind of thing like that. And then by the time she's 10, I mean she's like read like 50 books. Where Johnny's still struggling to learn how to read.
Right.
I'm gonna throw
but
this to
Johnny
my wife.
But Johnny can make Legos.
Yes. Johnny.
And the girl can't.
Yeah.
Well, talk about the studies that have been done with, like, boys especially, you know, and picking up reading.
Yeah,
and like
it's, most often boys, just the way they're made, their brains are different. I know that's a very unpolitically correct thing to say, but they are.
Thank you for saying an unpolitically correct thing.
But they are just often not ready to read until they're age 9, and that's just to begin. And often not reading well for comprehension until 11 or 12 years of age, where girls are faster. But then boys have this hands-on ability, this ability to see the big picture that I'm a girl. I did not have that. I'm not sure I still do.
Mm-hmm. No, I hold on, guys, because what you're saying is just amazing. What I'm seeing you is that homeschool offers the option to help Johnny, who might be termed stupid in school, but you're not going to term him stupid at homeschool. You're terming him as this is what you're strong in right now, and this is what we're going to focus on. And yeah. Sally, this is what we're going to focus on with you at the moment. And just because you're strong at reading, Sally, doesn't mean that we're going to ignore the other areas that you need some strength in. Maybe you need to figure out how to build a Lego too, just like Johnny. Yeah. You know, so when do you decide what talent that you should nurture as they get older? I mean, because everyone's been given giftings. And how do you guys do that?
Well,
with our kids. Oh, no, go ahead, Craig.
Okay, sorry. I was going to say a little bit going back to the reading thing. Our oldest son is 23 now. When he was little, we, you know, of course, he was the first one, and we got to be like everybody else. And we got to teach all our kids to read really young, and so they could be really smart and everything like that. Of course, we wanted our kids to be really smart, just like everybody else does. And so my wife started teaching him to read, and I mean, I'm a teacher, and she's just, you know, a smart, really smart, you know, valedictorian class kind of an individual, and really loves reading and linguistics and all this stuff. So we're going to teach our kids to read. She started when he was like 4 and a half at this book and started through it. Nothing. Totally was not grasping it whatsoever. Put it away. At 5, pulled it back out. Oh, sure, we could do it. We tried that, and then we tried another one, a different program. I said, oh, we could get him to read. Surely, nothing. So this went on. We went and did this like 3 times, and finally, like, okay, whatever. And we felt like we were the worst parents. And we just couldn't, you know, we were idiots because we didn't have no clue what to do. And our kid's going to be dumb and stupid the rest of their life. We didn't tell them that. But we felt like it, you know. And then one day we were sitting in the dining room or in the kitchen or something doing something. And he's in front of the TV, okay, a horrible TV thing. And he's watching cartoons and stuff. And he just all of a sudden starts reading the signs in the cartoon off out loud. And we're like, what? We walked over, and sure enough, he's reading the signs in there. And we're like, how did you do that?
Wow.
And he had just, you know, we had just a little bit we'd read to him all, you know, all his life. We'd read books and stuff so regularly. But we didn't force the issue, and he just grasped that on his own, listening to us. Over time, when his mind was ready, not when we as parents were ready.
But having said that, he's a fantastic reader and writer today.
Yeah.
Which we never dreamed that would happen of him.
So then,
and how? Oh yeah, how to get you?
How do you do that? And you know, this is a twofold question. How do you find the passion or gifting within your talent? Number one. Number two. When do you kick them out of the nest? When do they become their own person and they don't have to look to mom or dad and say
18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Help us out.
They're on their own.
There are some really great resources available. We are in the information society. We can get anything to help us kind of gauge the gifts and abilities that our children have. I love giving our kids like little personality tests, spiritual gift tests. We have a book on our shelf that has a 6-hour career test that I put my children through.
Wow.
But it's as far as their homeschooling. Love it. Yes, and
that
our
was an important
services, like Bob Jones University Press has a service for homeschoolers that helps them figure out their gifts and abilities. If you haven't figured it out just by listening to them talk and watching how they spend their free time, you know, as soon as they're done with math, what are they begging to go run off and do? That's a really good sign.
Yeah.
But I think by the time your goal as a parent, it's just like that hear, learn, keep, do. You start by teaching them to listen to you, then you teach them facts, but then the older you get, you should be progressing past facts up into repetition of those in their lives. And what do they repeat over and over again? You can't just homeschool. You need to actually be a family and spend time together. And that's how you get to know your children and see. But as far as when you kick them out, I think the scriptures, when are they ready to go off on their own?
Set them free.
By the age of 20 in scripture, they were counted as military men, and you know, David's men that were 20, they were listed as able soldiers. They were, you know, muscular and strong. So that's our goal. By 20, they should be able to be on their own without the coach yelling at them on the sidelines all the time. But then again, parents are supposed to be involved in their grandparents or their grandchildren's lives as well, yeah. Scripture says. So I think it's very gradual, and we have to be intentional about everything we do. I think, you know, for Craig and me, we take date nights where we sit down and we say, what do we need to focus on the next year with this child? What about that child? That's totally different. And so parents, you know, we can help each other out and really be intentional with our time over the years because it's precious. We don't have that much.
Yeah, I am curious, Ann, because when I look at your site and I look at the things that you guys do, and the amount of kids that you have, I mean, you're either super mom and dad, or you guys have learned how to calculate time. I mean, are there any hints there for us that are listening?
I was going to say that if we get our children, and we wish that we could do more with them and stuff.
Yeah.
But like our oldest one, that he works full time, but he's also really into computers and things, and we've strove to being what we do and have it on our use of computers and technology and stuff. We've kind of had a natural way to deal with him with that because it went with what we were already doing. Our daughter, though, likes art and things like that. And so what we did is we tried to find a way that we could put her in some like a local art classes we found a friend of a friend who was willing to teach her. We would have to drive her over and take a little bit of time to do that. But what we did is we kind of looked at what they were gravitating toward and tried to put them in things and challenge them to keep at them, but not necessarily like say, if you get into this, this is definitely what you're going to do. Because a lot of kids, I mean, a lot of what is important is exposing them to a lot of different things in order to find what they think is. If you've ever been exposed to something, you may not know that that's really what you're going to excel at.
Right.
But we wouldn't do it. We've never had a ton of money to be able to put them in much stuff. So we always have had to make a decision. Usually it's one thing a year. You get to pick one thing, and that's what we're going to, for our kids, that's what we're going to put you in. And also, that's a time thing, too, because if you're going to two or three different things for each kid, you can't do it, you know?
Love it.
Mom and dad are looking like tag teaming as they're running in different directions to get kid A to over to place B and so on and so forth, you know?
Craig, I was going to ask you that because you have seven kids and you're telling me they get to pick one thing. But even if all seven kids pick one thing, your mm-hmm. car bill driving here and there. And I mean, when do you guys wake up in the morning? 5 a.m. and then end at 11?
Our kids don't all pick things outside the home. Yeah.
Okay.
Some of our kids have chosen to do things, as you know, here at home, and for the younger kids, that we definitely have allowed the older kids to have the priority in that, since they're the ones that are at the age where they need to be out doing. But I think the key to time is there is just a finite amount of time and a finite amount of energy, and you have to pick. You have to make priorities. You can't do it all. You cannot. I mean, if you could see some of the corners of my kitchen floor, you know it. I have not chosen everything.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Our brush down there, you know. But
yeah, but you just can't do it all. And not, your kids, that's just a fact of life. They're going to say, but my friends get to do it. And you're going to say, I'm sorry, but the father chose to put you in this family, and we have run out of time and or money. And that's okay. You can be content with the life you have. And it's okay to say that to kids.
You know, but I've also heard other homeschooling families where the parent says, hey, look, this is the time, this is the money. If you've researched a skill set that you want to do and you know you're passionate about it, cool. Now let's figure out ways that you can raise money that you can do that. And,
right.
Or how you're going to get there. What is that?
My second daughter is going to a writing camp out in Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And last year, she's worked and raised saved all of her money to go do this 2 years in a row now.
Wow.
And last year, she worked to find a girl who was willing to carpool to help pay for the gas expenses. And my wife drove her out there because she had some health issues and we weren't concerned about letting her go by herself at first. So my wife worked the whole week while she was out there, while she was going to this camp, and then drove her there and back. But this year she's paying for her own ticket to fly out there and do it that way. But she's raised all of her own finances for that, and she's a passionate. You can see what passionate. If a kid is willing to save their money,
yeah,
and work to get to that point, then you can say this is probably something that they're passionate about. And so we schedule time to allow her to do her writing exercises she needs to do. We have her try. We helped her try and find a job that uses those skills and encourage.
Right, and she works online like we do. So I also think apples just don't fall from a tree. You know, we like working online, and you know, imagine that our kids like that too. So
our second son is an electrician's apprentice, and he's almost 19 now. And he, you know, we were looking at sending him into engineering and becoming an electrical engineer, what we were hoping him to do or thinking he was going to do. But he's like, you know, he's worked with me for a couple of years now out in my garage when I have time and doing, you know, woodworking and building furniture and redoing furniture and stuff like this. And through that, he found that he really likes using his hands and stuff. He is much more mechanical than I am. And he's like, Dad, I think I'd just rather do it, you know, be out every day doing stuff and going to different job sites than being in a desk or a cubicle or something like that, like possibly an engineer would.
Hmm.
And so we look to try and help him find a place where he could get a job as an apprentice. And we tried to contact, even though we haven't lived here very long, actually the place we found one was a relative of Ann's that lives in the area, a distant relative. He's like his own contractor, and he knew this other company that does a lot of the electrical work for them, and he put a good word in for my son, and he just happened, God worked it out. The father just absolutely worked it out. He got an apprenticeship job 2 weeks after I asked for one from them.
Oh, I love it.
And, yeah. Of all of our kids, just real quick, our oldest one likes computers. Our daughter likes art and is helping us with marketing and stuff in our company. Our next son is an electrical apprentice. Our next daughter is a writer and works online like us. My next daughter wants to be a blacksmith and work with horses in the farm.
Sweet. Okay, well, Craig, hold on just a second, Craig, because we're running out of time, and I have to make sure people know how to listen to you on Hebrew Nation Radio and also what the website is. If you guys have been listening in, you can tune in to Ann and Craig. They have a show at the Hebrew Nation Radio. It's aired at 4 o'clock on Mondays and 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoons. And it's I'd be happy to have you do it. What's the website?
Torahhome.com.
Yeah. Torahhome.com, and you guys can tune into them and listen and gather all kinds of info, right?
Yes. Household, parenting, marriage, all those kind of things. We encompass it all and just enjoy sharing our lives with other people, and hopefully they can learn things and get some good hints to help theirs.
I love it. You know, both of you guys are super blessing, and I hope you stay married, and I hope you keep raising those kids.
Hey, real quick question for you before we're out here. I see that your three oldest are 18 or older. Are you done educating them?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And in fact, I mean, you take the concept more of a coach, though. And we're their friends now. We desired when they're children to teach them as children and really impart life into them. But as when they get into the teenagers, we desire to change that relationship more into a friendship and have an opportunity where they can come to us with their questions and their concerns and their needs and ask.
The darkness must flee from the living word. His light now shines.